It's playoff time in the NBA and NHL. Baseball's in full swing, and FanDuel is your place to bet on every single game. Right now, new customers get $150 in bonus bets guaranteed. It's guaranteed. That's $150, win or lose. Bet on everything from slap shots to home runs to slam dunks, all on an app that's safe, secure, and easy to use. What are you waiting for? Visit FanDuel.com/Stewart and make your first bet an automatic win. FanDuel, America's number one sportsbook.
21 plus and present in Massachusetts. First online real money wager only. $10 first deposit required. Bonus issued as non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire 7 days after receipt. See terms at sportsbook.fanduel.com. Hope is here. Gambling helpline ma.org or call 800-327-5050 for 24/7 support. Play it smart from the start. GameSenseMA.com or call 1-800-GAM-1234.
B-Pod Studios.
Gasper and Murray have scorching hot takes, twisting your mind with Pat Celtics and Bates. They'll also talk socks and out-of-town fame. Just call them up on this Saturday. Gasper!
Hey, Murray.
Gasper!
Hey, Murray.
Just call them up on this Saturday. Gasper!
Hey, Murray.
Gasper!
Hey, Murray.
Gasper!
Hey, Murray.
Alrighty, from the Town Fair Tire Studio, lovely Dorchester, Mass., where I just saw a hypodermic needle on the ground in front of the supermarket next door before I came in today. Gasper Murray here on 98.5 Sports. Really, just, I mean, it sets quite a scene. It's very perfect. Good morning, Chris. Hi.
Hey, how you doing?
Oh.
How you feeling, Jim?
Just, you know, bright-eyed and bushy-tailed and ready to get
after
it.
Yeah, you sound peppy. Peppy this morning.
Yeah, just didn't want to stay in bed till noon. But, you know, the people need their takes. And it'll be outside. There's really no agenda other than crapping on Jimmy Garoppolo here today from now until 2. We have the Sports Hub Celtics show at noon. Outside of that, I figure we'll kind of be all over the place because it's just been kind of one of those weeks, you know?
I agree.
There's really not been, like, one real hot story. But I did want to start with one thing that did have people kind of a little bit hot and bothered earlier in the week, and that was the entrance into the Baseball Hall of Fame. You had Derek Jeter, who was a lock. He should have got the 100%, but, of course, there was one dissenting a-hole. We don't know who that is because, they should still protect the names, which I don't believe at all. If you're going to be able to vote and have that privilege to vote for any Hall of Fame, I want to see your ballot. Your ballot should be out there. Some people disagree, like that nerd Bill James. I saw him tweet last night, which is also kind of perfect because this is a guy who also, you know, stood up for a legendary creep and pervert that is Kevin Spacey. He says that the voters should still have their ballots private because, of course, yeah, everything should be kept underground, right, Bill James, you weirdo creep. So I think that should all be out there. And so Derek Jeter gets in. Great. We all knew that. He should have been a lock, should have been 100%. But Larry Walker gets in. Larry Walker, which I find hilarious and quite perfect. It's really beyond perfect, really, because that idiot sport is really doing its best to ruin itself on the field. And now it's doing it off the field as well, continuing to taint their Hall of Fame by allowing Larry Walker to get into the Baseball Hall of Fame. And you had a column on, some Hall of Fame thoughts and other baseball thoughts just a couple of days ago in the Boston Globe.
I did.
And you are a strong proponent of getting Barry Bonds and Roger Clemens in.
I am.
I am as well. And I don't want to take credit for this. It was because we were talking about it on Felgren Maz earlier this week. But someone tweeted at me, and I thought it was so perfect. Besides having the transparency of the ballots, the voting should go like this. You have 2 seconds to vote.
Yeah.
It should just be your gut reaction, right?
Like, yeah. Yeah.
Did you see these guys play? Don't think about war. Don't think about war plus RC, like any of your nerd stats. You have 2 seconds to vote. Here's the name. 2 seconds. Go. Here's the name. 2 seconds. Go. And I, you know, the guy tweeted it to me in jest, but I was like, this is perfect. This is how all voting should go for all the Hall of Fames, especially the Baseball Hall of Fame, because it's gotten way out of control. It started with Craig Biggio, and it's just getting worse.
Oh, it's the other day I saw someone wrote something about, like, you have to consider Scott Rowland in a Hall of
Famer. No, you don't.
And I was like, what? I'm like, he's like president of the Hall of Very Good.
Yeah. Name a big play that Scott Rowland was ever involved with at the plate or at third base.
I mean, he was good, but I mean, it's
fine.
Just gut reaction. I'm like, no,
right.
not a Hall of Famer.
2 seconds. That's right. Scott Rowland.
No.
Trot Nixon.
No.
Dustin Pedroia?
No.
See, thank you. Even though Dustin Pedroia is probably going to get in based on his stats and his one MVP in 08.
You really think so?
Oh, Chris, if they're going to let Larry Walker in, and who was it last year? Who was the one that got the like the write-in vote?
Harold Baines.
Oh, yeah, Harold Baines.
But that was like the back door of the Veterans Committee. That's different.
That's a little different.
Yeah,
sure,
people have to understand. Like, the writers have nothing to do with that. That's
okay.
Different.
Okay.
That's like baseball people basically being like, oh, we had, like Tony La Russa was on that committee, and it was like, well, we're going to just get this guy in. But can I just bring up this point on Larry Walker? Here's all you need to know about Larry Walker, right? This was his last year of eligibility. 5 years ago in 2015, how much of the vote do you think Larry Walker got, considering you need 75% of the voters to vote for you to get in?
Oh, we talked about this on the show. It was like 10%, wasn't it?
11.8.
Yeah.
He went from 11.8 to 76.6 in 5 years. And nothing changed.
Well, what changed is, you know, and credit to the players, some of these guys that really hustle and work. I mean, they work these writers. And what bugs me, what ends up working in their favor, but credit to their hustle, is that they get the good guy bump. Like Larry Walker was a good guy. He was a good guy when he played. He's been a good guy since. He gets the good guy bump. Because if you just want to break it down in the numbers and even get into your nerd numbers, like WAR and WAR Plus and everything else, if Larry Walker's in, a guy from that era who should also be in is Albert Bell. But Albert Bell will never get into the Baseball Hall of Fame. And nor should he. But if you're going to put Walker in, put in Albert Bell. But Albert Bell won't because he wouldn't get in on the good guy bump. Albert Bell was a bad guy. The writers hate Albert Bell. He was universally disliked by all the writers.
Yeah.
And so Albert Bell will never get in. So it doesn't make any sense. These guys get, like, Larry Walker gets in because he was a good guy. That's it.
It's interesting. 2 years ago, Larry Walker, 34.1% of the vote.
Stupid.
I also think there is a human element here, which is sort of, to your point, it is a good guy factor, but it's also sort of like, oh, there's an element of sentimentality that goes into this, and I think there's also sort of an element of when you look at it, like a little bit of sympathy for these guys, and it's like, well, this is his last year, all right, I'll vote for him. You know what I mean? Like, if you didn't think the guy was a Hall of Fame, if only about a third of the voters thought he was a Hall of Famer 2 years ago, how the hell is he in the Hall of Fame now?
It makes no sense.
It makes zero sense.
It really doesn't. And, you know, look, you listen to the show with any regularity, or if you've ever met either of us, you know that Chris has far more class than I ever will, even in his pinky, more than I'll ever have. But I'll tell you, Chris, and the way you wrote this, you seemed hot when you wrote this column about Barry Bonds and Clemens belonging in the Hall of Fame.
Yeah.
And it feels like there's disgust that emanates from you for your brethren, those that get to vote. I don't know how you don't spit in their faces, because I would. Like, this is, it's like a sports crime that someone like Larry Walker gets in, again, who had 11% of the vote just going back, what, five years ago. And Bonds and Clemens, and I know they're tainted because of steroids, but whatever, that era existed. But outside of that, Clemens, for his Red Sox career alone, should be in the Baseball Hall of Fame.
I think so. I mean, and then people will start to say the longevity thing.
Ugh.
But it's like, again, you know, there are people who are in that don't have. That's the other thing that annoys me about this. As much as people like me who are sort of I'm an old school baseball fan, as much as I'll get mocked for like the counting stats, you know, because and I do recognize the new age stats, but I still like the old ones that I grew up with. But that you'll get mocked for, oh, counting stats. But do you know what the funny thing is? When push comes to shove for the Hall of Fame, so much of it is about accumulating the counting stats. And it's like, oh, Burt Blyleven played 23 seasons and he did this. And it's like, dude, if you would just give me Roger Clemens from like 85 to when he left here after, what was that, after the 96 season?
Yeah.
Like, that period of time was enough for me to know he was in the Hall of Fame. Like, I don't necessarily need, like, longevity is important for certain guys. But if you have a guy that has like a dominant decade stretch the way Clemens did, like, I'm good. That's enough. Like, I know that guy's a Hall of Famer. I'll put him in.
Right,
you know, as opposed to like a Don Sutton or Burt Blatt, some guy that hangs around, Jim Cott, some guy that hangs around forever and just stacks up stats.
All right, I want to do this 2 second thing that I was talking about earlier with some of the names that are going to be eligible in 2021. This ballot, holy crap. Mark Burley.
No.
AJ Burnett.
No.
Michael Kadire.
No.
Dan Haran.
No.
Tim Hudson.
No.
Torrey Hunter.
Ooh. No.
Adam LaRoche.
No.
Aramis Ramirez.
No.
Alex Rios.
No.
Nick Swishalicious Swisher.
No.
Dan Ugla. Dan Ugla?
No.
Shane Victorino.
No.
Barry Zito.
No.
Yeah, see, that's how it should go. That's how it should go. You have 2 seconds. There's the name. Go. There's the name. Go. It should be like that for every Hall of Fame. And if you try to take longer, you get zapped.
What else, like, you got? I was like, oh, knows. Who else you got?
That's it. Those are the new names for 20. And this is why some of these guys.
Oh, so you're saying some of these guys are going to get in?
No, what I think, because
I mean, Schilling's going to get in. Like Shaughnessy basically said, Schilling's going to be the only person next year. But I'll tell you, next year would be a good year. What's 2022? Because next year would be a good year to put Bonds and Clemens in.
Yeah, and they should, get a bump. And by the way, even though I find him to be a detestable human being and just an insufferable bore, yeah. I would vote for Schilling just based on the postseason record alone and how dominant he was. I think, you know, the bigger games matter. I'm one of those guys that
I'm coming around. He's still
I wait the postseason more than the regular season.
He's just borderline. The thing for me is like, you know, and it's not his fault because this is what I need to come to grips with. He pitched in an era with Pedro Martinez and Randy Johnson, and that's not his fault. But they're not winning a Cy Young thing. Bugs me.
Yeah, and I can understand that.
But I have to be fair about it and look at it and be like, that wasn't his fault. And he had plenty of seasons that were good enough to win a Cy Young. So, yes, he's in. He deserves to be in.
And I don't – yeah, because he pitched in an era where there was just so many dominant pitchers that he was just never going to end up breaking through and winning a Cy Young.
Not
so I don't hold
fault.
That against him. So quickly, 2022 eligibles. Let's do this game because I love doing this. Yeah. Carl Crawford.
No.
Carl Crawford. Prince Fielder.
No.
Ryan Howard.
Yes.
Really?
Yeah, I think he's in.
Wow. Tim Lincecum.
Yes.
Really?
You don't not long enough?
No.
Okay.
Joe Nathan.
No.
Big Poppy.
Yes.
Jonathan Papelbon.
Oh, that's a tough one.
No. You would have gotten zapped.
I would have gotten zapped. I don't know. I need to look at his numbers.
Let me give it to you. So, six-time All-Star who pitched 12 seasons for the Sox, Phillies, Nationals, saved 30 or more games in 10 seasons, striking out at least 10 batters per nine in six seasons. Blah, 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 blah. Won the World Series in 07, seven postseason series, 2-1, seven saves, ERA of 1 in 18 games.
How many career saves?
368.
I think he's in. Over 300.
I'll tell you, so I'm reading this and looking at these numbers, like, Papelbon could get in.
I think he's in. I put him in.
Jake Peavy?
No.
AJ Pierzynski?
No.
A-Rod?
No.
Yes.
I just don't like him. I'm not going to lie. I'm a hypocrite. I don't care. But he did it twice, and that bugs me. Although, I'll tell you what, I'd put Manny in, so I am a hypocrite.
Jimmy Rollins.
Yes.
Jesus, Chris. Mark Teixeira.
Yes.
Holy crap. Wow, your hall stinks. But I'll give you credit. At least you had a quick answer.
An MVP.
Four-time Gold Glover winner at shortstop, 17 seasons. 2007 NL MVP.
He was a good player. And the bar's a little lower at shortstop because it's not traditionally an offensive position.
That's fair. Almost 2,500 hits, 511 doubles, 470
stolen bases. Pretty good.
He was pretty good.
Yeah, I told you.
But
you don't want to put anybody. You're like one of those old people who's like, yeah, you know, Mickey Mantle was amazing, but no one I watched was ever any good.
Yeah, I'm not Felger small hall. Like he, you know, I joked yesterday, like his Hall of Fame is like any room he wants to be in. It's just him and nobody else.
Yeah, but didn't he say he's on board with Molly being in, his beloved Molly? That's
Paul Molitor?
Yeah, that's a borderline guy.
Yeah, that's another
borderline. And I loved him
guy.
As a player, but I mean, if, you know, anybody who's saying that is, you know, your hall is a little bigger than you think.
Yeah, so I don't know. I just thought it was kind of a perfect microcosm of baseball and what has happened to that sport that Larry Walker gets into the Hall of Fame. Because, again, they're trying to kill their sport on the field. And now you have this whole, you know, it's getting continuing to be more. Just it's a tough sell, I think, for a lot of people, especially with everything that's happened with this whole cheating scandal now. And even locally, you know, it sounds like the Red Sox are still trying to move on from Mookie Betts, which, you know, with everything that they've gone through, and even if they come back squeaky clean from Major League Baseball and their report on what happened with their cheating scandal, I'm not going to buy it because they clearly made a deal with and that's a
Rob
bad
Manfred.
Job.
You know, yes. I'm not going to buy it. And it's not from the Red Sox side. I won't buy it from MLB just quickly after finding out this week that they cut a secret deal with,
the players?
For no punishment. And then Manfred lied about it in his report and said the reason they didn't do the discipline was because there were just so many guys and it would have been impractical, quoting him exactly, impractical to assign discipline because how do you know, who was involved to what degree? It was like you were never going to punish anybody. Cutting a deal, like, I don't love that, Jim, but I can understand it. But when you're not forthright and transparent with it, like, to me, that's my bigger issue. Why should I trust a word you say about this sign-stealing thing when you lied about the player discipline? That really bugs me.
It just, it reeks of a cover-up and a conspiracy. That's what it does. And just quickly, just your thoughts on this Mookie Betts rumor that came from The Athletic this week. The Red Sox were talking with the Padres. It'd be Will Myers, some prospects. Obviously, the Red Sox don't have any prospects. They want to try to – this scandal – and even if it comes back squeaky clean, I don't think a lot of people are going to buy it, rightfully so. I think you should be all in this year to try to, you know, get your fan base back and try to, you know, prove the doubters wrong and just go all in. Like, to sell on Mookie Betts at this point, it really doesn't make that much sense to me.
No, it's a, I mean, it's a valid point from a PR standpoint, but I think the plan sort of all offseason has been to gauge Mookie's interest in re-signing. And here we are basically at the end of the offseason, and I don't think they feel like they're any closer to signing him before he reaches free agency. And so there's a certain part where you have to take the PR and the emotion out of it and say, all right, what's just the best business decision? And the best business decision is to try and maximize the asset. I mean, if anything, I think they've waited too long, Jim. I'm afraid now that they're just going to have to accept basically some subpar deal, 60 cents on the dollar, because they've waited too long. I think teams are probably more inclined at this point in the offseason to just roll the dice with what they've got and see how it pans out in spring training in the first month and a half of the season, and then try and go for a Mookie Betts. And then at that point, your team's not even getting him for the full year. So are they going to pay as much of the freight as the Red Sox want them to pay right now when they're getting him for less time during the season? That seems unlikely to me.
All right, we'll get to crap it on Garoppolo. Going to be a lot of that today, as it's the Niners and Chiefs in Super Bowl 54 in Miami a week from tomorrow. Get to that next. If you want to join us on just about anything here today, give us a call, 617-779-0985. It's a very loose Gasper and Murray here on 98.5 The Sports Hub.
Gasper and Murray. Gasper and Murray. Gasper and Murray. Gasper and Murray. On 98.5 The Sports Hub. You're listening to Gasper and Murray.
Fantastic chemistry.
98.5 The Sports Hub.
So Belichick's a brilliant guy. Why would he give a quarterback that he knew was going to be great away for a second-round pick? Jimmy Garoppolo's in the Super Bowl, and I'm not a conspiracy guy, but why would Belichick give the Niners a quarterback to the best offensive coach in football, the young guy, and not demand picks back? He wanted to ensure Garoppolo's excellence to prove a point. I wanted to move off. This was my guy, and he's going to ensure that he's great. Nobody is happier in the world that Garoppolo is in a Super Bowl than Bill Belichick. Bill would love to be facing him, but nobody is happier in the world other than the Shanahan family that Garoppolo's in than Belichick, because it proves Bill right. Bill had his guy. Bill wanted to go. Bill wasn't allowed to. Bill had to trade him, so he was going to guarantee Garoppolo worked. I'm trading you to the best young coach, and I'm not asking anything in return that will disrupt you potential dynasty. Is that crazy? Do you guys think I'm nuts on that?
No, Colin Cowherd, I don't. I actually buy that. I don't think it's that freaky of a conspiracy theory. And that was, you know, so I edited that down and we played that on Philbert Maz this week. It was part of like a whole 7-minute soliloquy by Colin Cowherd on Fox Sports 1. And he tried to paint it as like this big conspiracy theory that Jimmy Garoppolo was sent to the Niners because he'd get the soft landing spot from Bill Belichick and he wanted to put him in the best place possible. And one of the reasons he didn't ask for more outside of that second round pick was because, well, he wanted Jimmy Garoppolo to be surrounded by more talent and the Niners to be able to draft more talent around him, whether it was McGlinchey at right tackle or it's not like they expected him to get hurt last year, but they finish so in the top 10 of the draft. They're able to take Bosa. So now that defense is dominant. So no, I don't think that's that big of a conspiracy theory. You know, the return is always going to, I think, rub Patriots fans the wrong way, and rightfully so. It should. I mean, he didn't get enough back. It wasn't in the best interest of the team. But here we have Jimmy Garoppolo and the 49ers in the Super Bowl, Kansas City Chiefs, Patrick Mahomes next week. Both of those games, I don't know how you felt about them, Chris. I thought they were mostly worthless and a dud outside of the first half of Chiefs-Titans.
Hey, I thought the first half of Chiefs-Titans was good.
And then they ended up playing out exactly the way that I thought they were. They were mostly blowouts, especially that second game. Completely worthless. Oh, my God. I wish that the Seahawks could have ended up beating the Packers.
I know.
That
would have been a heck of a game, especially the games that those two teams, the Seahawks and 49ers, had played this year. If only Pete Carroll had not punted the ball and had, you know.
Yep.
I mean, again, I don't want to beat a dead horse, but it was 4th-and-11, what, from their own 36? So, I mean, all you had to do, if you just hold them to a field goal, you get the ball back, you're down 8. So you need the touchdown and the 2-point conversion to tie. To me, in that situation, if I'm going to ride or die with my best player, and my best player is Russell Wilson.
Yeah. Yeah, that was, oh God.
He can't get it right.
If you had the Seahawks in that game, you actually would have got a real game.
I agree.
But anyway, those are the two teams. I do think that they're the right teams, though. I think this is the right Super Bowl matchup. These were the two best teams from week 8 on. The Niners defense is phenomenal, speed all over the field. But they do have their handsome sidecar quarterback. You heard what Colin Cowherd had to say. Are you surprised he's here this quick? You and I obviously have given the people a lot of factual stats and
correct
backed it up on yes how we feel about Jimmy Garoppolo. We
were have
doing that yesterday with Felger and Maz.
Yes.
While you were being countered with fake stats from
that
both Felger
correct
and Maz that they gathered from fakestats.com.
Yeah, legitimately fake stats. Like this one Felger had, which apparently, you know, came from an avid listener.
Yeah,
about
NinersLover1@gmail.com.
which was that... you know, Jimmy Garoppolo led the NFL this year in fourth quarter comebacks with four. That was a stat that, you know, Felger threw in my face.
I knew this sounded
and
devious.
I asked him actually to share it with me because I'm writing a column on Jimmy G. And I was like, you know, in the interest of being fair and balanced, I should cite that stat. But, you know, you got to look these things up to make sure. So I just happened to go on Pro Football Reference and Jimmy Garoppolo did have four game-winning drives this year. It was game-winning drives. I'm sorry, it was the stat, not fourth quarter comebacks. Game-winning drives. He did have four game-winning drives. The problem is that did not lead the league. The league leaders in game-winning drives this year were Russell Wilson with five, Deshaun Watson with five, and proving this is a worth the stat, Josh Allen with five.
Now, that's company that Jimmy Garoppolo belongs in. That,
yes.
Allen, not the first.
Now, the other two quarterbacks that also had four game-winning drives this year, Ryan Fitzpatrick and Carson Wentz. And I actually like Carson Wentz. But again, this just proves that, yes, the stat is from fakestats.com, but also it is a worthless stat, by and large.
Yeah, no, I knew it. I knew that sounded weird when he said that yesterday,
yeah,
when he tried to blow us on that. But, yeah, you know, that he gets here, and even if, like, do you have any, I guess fear might not be the right word, but
yeah.
I don't know, you're a little bit nervous that he goes in and ends up lighting it up, and then, you know, you're going to end up having egg in your face like I would, too, that following yeah Monday.
I mean, I think he can play. I just don't think he's done anything in the postseason. I said the other day, like, I think he's going to throw three touchdown passes in this game.
Really?
Yeah.
So you don't believe that much in that Chiefs defense, huh?
Not really.
The way that they played the last couple of months?
No, I'm not really. I don't. I think they're a lot better, but I still think that they're going to be so concerned was stopping the run, and I think they're going to dare Jimmy to beat them. I don't think it will be enough, but I think it's going to be a higher scoring game, and I think he's going to throw touchdown passes in this game. I do. I mean, I don't think he's a stiff. I just think he's overrated.
Yeah, and that's what it is, and I play it up a bit, obviously.
Oh, yeah, you know, me too.
I don't think
I mean, how can you not when somebody on the station is literally wearing his jersey in a 49ers helmet and sticking it in your face?
I don't think that he flat sucks, but I do think that he's Jared Goff-y. Like,
I agree.
Like, Jared Goff is good, but Jared Goff is also a mistake waiting to happen, and I think the same thing with Garoppolo, and I think that's evident if you've watched any of those games.
I mean, I think that's a little... So I agree with you. I think that's a little harsh in terms of mistake waiting to happen as the sole description of the quarterback. I do think Jimmy is mistake prone. I would describe it this way. He's like Jared Goff. He has a lot of talent, but he's being managed. He's being stage managed like a little pageant girl by his head coach. That's what's happening. And that's what happened last year with Jared Goff. And that's what's happening here. Seriously, Kyle Shanahan is a stage mom. That's what's going on here. You have to make sure that little Jimmy looks as good as possible and is in the best light. And we know what little Jimmy's comfortable with and little Jimmy's not comfortable with and what he does well. And little Jimmy, turn to the left because that's your good side. Don't turn to the right because that's your bad side. That's what's happening. Shanahan is a stage mom.
I don't think you're going to put it any more perfectly. I'm with you, though, that I do think this will end up being a high-scoring game because both these offenses and that offensive line, I think, is what sets everything up with the 49ers in their running game and the way that they utilize Kittle, who is the best tight end of the game.
Yes.
And I think is their MVP offensively. Like, we could be looking at what the Eagles and Patriots, you know, played to in the Super Bowl just a few years ago. I wouldn't be surprised if this game's, like, in the 30s, and it's a bit of a shootout. And you're also getting, you know, defensive scores and, like, it should be a pretty entertaining game. It should be these two teams.
Yeah, I mean, I would like to see Baltimore. I thought that first game between Baltimore and the 49ers was a really good game. I mean, it wasn't a lot of scoring, but I thought that was a fun game. I thought Baltimore was the best team, you know, all year long. But Kansas City is certainly deserving. Look, their offense is tremendous. You're right about the defense. It's gotten better. The 49ers certainly are a deserving team as well. It's amazing. I mean, it's the little things in the NFL. If Jacob Hollister is able to get another inch and scores a touchdown in that final game of the regular season against the 49ers and the Seahawks win that game, then the 49ers are not the one seed, they're the five seed, and they're probably not here.
Yeah, I'm glad you brought this up because the narrative that at least, you know, that Maz believes, and look, it was an entertaining game, that the most important game, the game that decided the seeding in the NFC was that Saints Niners game. That was that shootout down in New Orleans.
That was a heck of a game.
And it was a heck of a game. But no, you're ultimately right. That last Seattle Niners game in Seattle, that's the thing that determined everything.
Yeah.
If San Fran's not the one, they're not here. They're not in this game.
No, I don't think they are. I'm sorry. They're not.
All right. So we have to get to the Brady watch as that will continue this offseason where it's going to be quarterbacks, who's going where, are guys going to be returned to their teams, and that involves not just Brady, but Drew Brees and Phillip Rivers and others. But Brady is obviously the most important piece. There's part of me, if it's just going to end up looking like they did this year, Chris, and I've been like, you know, F the future and all that, but if it's going to be like this year, and by week three, you got a pouty Brady, even when they're winning games in Buffalo, like, they should go their separate ways. If it's going to be like that again, and let's just move on. Like, I'd love to see him in a Vegas Raiders uniform. It'd be the balls. And I think you'd get a re-energized Brady, and he'd want to stick it to Bill, and I want to see Bill try to prove everyone, the doubters like myself, that he can do it with another quarterback. But I want that quarterback to be Jared Stidham. Not a name that keeps getting thrown around that I'm starting to get real nervous about. A soulless ginger. I want no part of in a Patriots uniform.
The Red Rifle.
Yeah. We'll get to this coming up next here on Gasper and Murray.
This is Gasper and Murray.
You will listen.
98.5, the Sports Hub.
I don't believe the New England Patriots are waiting till March 16th to get an answer from Tom Brady. Right? Last year, Rob Gronkowski wound up retiring in late March. Now, I don't know the conversations they didn't have before, but New England missed the window on free agent tight ends. So I don't think that they're going to let Tom Brady go to free agency, all of a sudden sign with Team X, and then on March 20th say, well, what do we do at quarterback now? So that's not the way that organization operates.
Yeah, so before we get to the talk of Andy Dalton being the next quarterback of the New England Patriots, if Tom Brady were to leave to go to maybe the Vegas Raiders or L.A. Chargers or elsewhere, anywhere but here, what did you make of this report from Adam Schefter just a couple of days ago? Adam Schefter, maybe the most plugged in of all the NFL insiders, he of ESPN, saying that there is a deadline date here with the Patriots. Do you think this was posturing, especially since you got Brady last week at the big UFC fight with Conor McGregor out in Vegas, and you see him talking to the owner of the Raiders? Do you think this is, you know, that was posturing then, and now it's the Patriots' turn to do that? Or do you think this is real?
I think it's posturing on all sides. I really do. I think everybody is trying to get as much leverage as they can before we really get down to the point where all sides have to sort of cross the Rubicon and there's no going back. And so I think that at this point, that's why you hear, well, you know, Brady's open to other teams, and you're hearing the Patriots, well, we want an answer by this date. Because people are trying to generate and create essentially false deadlines to get the other side to acquiesce. And I just don't think you're going to really see that until we really get down to those last couple of days. And I just have a hard time believing that the Crafts would say to Belichick, oh, you want to sign Andy Dalton or you want to line up Andy Dalton on the 16th of March? Okay, that's it. No Tom. Like, I think they're going to want to wait to see how it plays out with Brady. And I think that this thing ultimately will end up playing out beyond March 18th.
Who's it really come down to? Is it more Belichick's call, or will Robert Kraft have to step in to make sure that, you know, he's going to be back? And I don't want to own this watching Tom Brady go off and play for another team for his last few years.
You know, I think it's a very sort of complicated and intricate scenario. And I think all of the sides are waiting for somebody else to blink and for somebody else to fold. And so from Brady's side, they're waiting for Robert Kraft to jump in and sort of save him. I think from the Kraft side, they're sort of waiting maybe for Belichick or Brady to blink and give in to the other one. I think Belichick is probably waiting for Brady to blink and just take a one-year deal. And that's the thing. You know, at the end of the day here, who at the end of the day is going to be the person who ends up capitulating, and I don't know who it will be. You know, my guess based on history would be Tom, but I think if they really push him too far and offend him and he feels disrespected, then almost out of spite, I think he'll go somewhere else. Because during the regular season, he was definitely ready and definitely of the mindset of, I will move on from here.
Have you wavered based on what you wrote a few weeks ago on the Globe saying that, you know, now the most likely option is for Brady to come back?
I have not wavered. I have not wavered on that. That's still the way that I feel and based on the information I have. But I will say there have been updates that other people have had since then. You know, I don't have any sort of update. I just think that, again, I take a lot of this as posturing. Now, what would make me feel differently, Jim, would be if it turned out there was some sort of discussion between Brady and the Patriots since my report and the groundwork was sort of laid for where their negotiations are going to go. And Tom didn't like it, and he felt it was sort of more of the same. And because I think it is a situation where at 42 years old, and based on the last couple of years, he could get his back up here in a hurry if he feels like they're not showing him the proper respect. And again, just sort of out of spite, be like, we'll forget you then. You know, I'm moving on.
Joe in Lincoln, you're first up here in Gasper and Murray this morning on Tom Brady. Hey, Joe.
Hey, how you doing, guys? I have a question for Chris, but before that, just quick on the Brady retirement. I wish he'd retired after the Atlanta Super Bowl to be in the middle of the Jimmy G era and be very happy. And but I don't think he's going to retire. But here's a question for Chris. And I kind of phrased it last week when I asked you guys. The Buffalo game, the second Buffalo game, a good defense. And Brady looked terrific. He was like the old Brady thrown to the open receiver, you know, thrown to everybody. You know, even the ones people thought should not be playing at all. And he looked great. Then he looked terrible against Miami and okay against Tennessee. What went right against Buffalo? What was the difference? Thanks.
Yeah, I mean, that's a good question. I mean, I would have to sort of go back and look at that game. Like, off the top of my head, it's not really sort of clicking. But I was pretty consistent all year long in that I thought a lot of it had to do with what was around him. I think that was a big factor. And you know, when you like, I remember talking to Logan Ryan after the Tennessee game, and he was pretty much saying that they knew they just had to shut down Edelman and White and they'd be fine. And I think a lot of teams looked at it that way. And so when somebody who's played here and is on the other side and has game plan for them says something like that, you know, I pay attention because that's probably the prevailing attitude in the league. Like, if we just lock up Edelman and White, we're good. I think Edelman started to get banged up towards the end of the year, and that was an issue for Brady as well. So, I mean, I have to go back and look at it, but I'm not sure it's as simple as sort of, you know, Buffalo was the be-all, end-all, and these other games were games that indicated that there's some sort of issue with Brady and that he's in decline. And I'm not saying the caller's saying that, but I'm just saying I think sometimes when you look at a one-game sample size and try and extrapolate it, it doesn't always work that way.
Well, I think there's two things that immediately come to mind for me, and one was that Buffalo played a lot of zone in that game, idiots, and two, health was a factor. Brady must have felt really good that night against Buffalo, and the following week, he goes from wearing his red Under Armour cleats that he always wears to those old man shoes with the lifts because he's dealing with the foot injury.
Yeah.
And there wasn't that much zip on the ball. I remember that terrible pick six. Like, yep. I think health was a factor, too. And
that's a good point. I mean, I think his mechanics were off in that Miami game. You're absolutely right. So, you know, health probably was a big factor at that point. And, you know, it's also it's just a situation where maybe you have a good game plan. You come out, you execute early, you build some confidence. And even the Miami game, though, I mean, look, that game, I still feel like they should have won. The team was built around the defense. All the defense has to do is get off the field and they get the first round bye.
Do you feel like I do, though, that if it is going to play out the way that this year played out and Brady continues to look like someone shot his dog in front of him, even after wins, that they should go their separate ways? Like, you know how I've been like, no, F the future. Brady has to retire here. But really, Chris, even like, because it felt like a hollow 12-4. They beat up on a, you know, historically easy schedule, easy. I think the defense slid towards the last couple of months.
Yeah.
And they ended up being where they were for a reason, playing a wild card weekend to get knocked out by the Titans. So if it's going to play out like that, they should go their separate ways.
I don't, because I still feel like Brady gives you the best chance to win based on what your team is. And you still should have.
Are you
going to
get them weapons,
defense,
though? Is it going to be the same crap here?
I mean, I think one thing is you have to put the tight end position back in the offense. And I've mentioned this before, but according to Sharp Football Stats, they had the lowest percentage of targets to tight ends of any team in the league. So can you imagine how jarring it is
to go from
Rob Gronkowski to having the lowest percentage of to having an offense that's built around the tight end to literally not being able to throw to the tight end at all? It's just like a non-factor. Like, they got to do something there.
All right. Well, if he is to go, the name being thrown around and it's gaining steam for whatever reason, really starting to bother me, is Andy Dalton. Can you imagine that? Andy Dalton is going to be like, we're going to hate whoever it is anyway after Brady. Maybe you'd wish the best for Stidham or someone that they may draft. And then, you know, okay, we'll have a decent quarterback and we'll go forward here and they'll still be successful because they have Belichick. But Andy Dalton. You really hate Andy Dalton. I really do. He should be driving Uber right now. He shouldn't even be in the league. So we'll get to this coming up next here. Gasper Murray.
Stay tuned for more Gasper and Murray on 98.5 The Sports Hub. This is Gasper and Murray on 98.5 The Sports Hub.
I have no idea, neither do you, who Bill Belichick sits in his office, feet up on the desk, watching tape of who he says, I really like that guy. Whether or not the rest of the league likes him or not. One of the guys I think, and I know this, people are going to laugh at this, I think Bill Belichick would really like to work with Andy Dalton. You know, because Andy Dalton is, he's a football player. You know, and he's not Tom Brady. He's not going to go down in the pantheon. I get it. Guys who are going to go down in the pantheon at age 32 are not available. Okay, but Russell Wilson's not available. But I think Andy Dalton would be a very compelling guy to be a bridge, either to be their quarterback for a while, or to be their bridge guy to the next quarterback.
All right, there's Peter King talking about the potential of Andy Dalton being the guy that comes in as your starting quarterback of the Patriots if Tom Brady is to go elsewhere this offseason. Gasper Murray, 98.5, the Sports Hub, says, well, he's not Tom Brady. Yeah, Peter, he's not even Ryan Tannehill, because Ryan Tannehill has actually won a playoff game. Andy Dalton, I mean, he stinks. He stinks. This is like I was saying earlier, Chris, with the two-second rule that someone said about, you know, that's how long you should have in terms of voting for any Hall of Fame. Two-second rule. Andy Dalton, good or bad? Bad. If you have working eyes, you've watched him play, he stinks. So much so that a new head coach, an offensive-minded head coach, the new coach of the Bengals this year, Zach Taylor, who was under Sean McVay and is one of these new offensive wonder kids, is how he got that job. He benched him for Ryan Finley. Ryan Finley, who was a rookie, right? They got him out of NC State.
Yeah, NC State. Yeah.
And he wasn't all that good, so they had to go back to Dalton. But he got benched for a rookie. It's done with Dalton. He stinks. And no. And I get it. No, whoever's going to be after Brady's going to suck, and I'm going to hate him anyway, and most people will. But, like, Dalton's done. And just if go the youth route. Just go with Stidham or draft someone. How old is Dalton? Like 30 already?
Hell, he's 32.
32. He's been in the league long enough. We have a big enough sample size. He's never won a playoff game. 0-4, one touchdown and six picks in the playoffs, four fumbles, 12 sacks, completion percentage of just over 55%. He's awful. He's awful. And this would be the height of hubris from Bill Belichick. And I get it. Look, greatest coach of all time. In terms of a GM, cold streak, three straight years, bad drafts. But he has taken guys that have been in the league and polished to turn into a diamond. He has.
Yeah, you know, he's excellent at that.
Might be one of his better attributes. But this, Chris, like his hubris moves, how many of those really have worked out for him?
Well, Antonio Brown didn't.
The Malcolm Butler decision in the Super Bowl a couple years ago didn't.
I mean, I would argue Josh Gordon did, even though they won the Super Bowl. I mean, that they were in a little bit of a tough spot at the most important time of the year. First of all, the last two games Josh Gordon played of the Super Bowl winning season, so not this season.
Useless in that Pittsburgh game.
We're talking about 2018, yeah. Pittsburgh. And remember, they targeted him 12 times against Tennessee.
Yeah.
And he only caught four. So they were trending in the wrong, you know, direction there. So it was Pittsburgh, Miami, he was non-factor in those games. And then he wasn't around for the most important games of the season. So that one didn't. I would not put that in the win category.
I hate that this is gaining steam. You know, so these are from plug. I mean, Peter King is as plugged in as any other guy. Like, you're Adam Schefter's of the world. For him to be saying this, and, you know, Jimmy Stewart and his moles, he was saying, you know, it's like, yep, no, I've heard
that
it
concerns me more than
right.
Peter.
Yeah,
just
right.
Because Peter's been on the outs with Bill for a long time now. So, you know, that's a little different than your normal report from Peter, because I don't think he's quite as close with Bill as he used to be, unless there's been, you know, some
a thaw.
Yeah, unless there's been some sort of thaw there.
I just, you know, again, like, they're going to take a hit no matter who it is if Brady leaves.
Yeah.
But for just even from a PR standpoint, never mind the football, you can't bring in Andy Dalton to be the guy. You just can't. Like, he is the epitome of suck. He really, to me, he when you get benched for Ryan Finley this year, when you have an offensive-minded new head coach, like, that's it. And then when you saw him late in the year against the Patriots,
four picks, no
zip on the ball whatsoever. He's cooked. He's washed.
I mean,
he's done.
The four picks, but it's not like he had. Look, that was the worst team in the league. We know that. They have the number one pick. So you can argue from that regard, they didn't have a lot to work with. I didn't think it was a great offensive line. But I was at that game. I covered it. And I was like, man, you know what? The Bengals have some skill position players. Remember Joe Mixon? Remember how much Belichick raved about Mixon?
Mixon was nasty in that
And then
game.
Tyler Boyd's pretty good, even though Gilmore got the best of him. They had a couple of tight ends who weren't, you know, too bad. I'm not saying they were loaded, but I just think if Dalton were a better quarterback, he could have done more with that. Like, I know you hate some of the guys I've mentioned, but if I'm making a list of guys I want to replace Brady, if they move on from Brady or Brady moves on and it's not really even a choice, Dalton's at the bottom of it. I would rather have Marcus Mariota. I know you hate him.
I do.
But he's 26 years old.
Right.
I mean,
And was the number two pick. So I see I get the argument for Mariota way more than I do Dalton.
And I just think Josh McDaniels could work some wonders with him.
Does like a mobile quarterback.
And they would do some creative stuff. Derek Carr. You know, I
could live with that.
Yeah, I mean, he completed 70% of his passes this year. Again, I'm not saying he's a franchise quarterback, but I think he's a guy that if you had McDaniels, they could get a lot out of him. They could get enough out of him to be a good team, to be a playoff team. So those would be, you know, two of my guys. And then I'd say, like, you know, Kirk Cousins, if somehow he became available. I mean, that's the other thing, not to tie this back all to Jimmy G, but I'm going to tie it all back to Jimmy G. If you look at a lot of the numbers on this stuff, Jimmy G basically is Kirk Cousins. And they're essentially running the same offense. You know, it's Gary Kubiak. It was his offense for the most part in Minnesota, even though Kevin Stefanski was the offensive coordinator. Kubiak was brought in as a consultant. Now he's the offensive coordinator. Gary Kubiak played for Shanahan. It's the same type of offense. Their numbers are similar. It's a very quarterback-friendly system. I still would much rather have Garoppolo than Kirk Cousins. But I'm just saying, like, unless you think Kirk Cousins is an amazing franchise quarterback, then I don't want to hear it about Jimmy G.
Let's go to Tim in Wakefield on Andy Dalton. Go ahead, Tim.
Hey, Jim. I have a question, but first I just want to say I'm proud of you for backing off your F the future take, because if another year of old mopey Brady is what we're going to get, I don't think anybody wants that. So real quick, best case, really?
I mean, I don't want him to mope, but yeah, I want another year of Brady.
Well, Brady is old Brady, the Brady of the past, not Brady of this past year.
Yeah.
But real quick, I just want to say, best case scenario, I think, if you're a sports fan, not a New England honk, but a sports fan, you want Brady going to the Las Vegas Raiders and coming back with John Gruden to try to stick it to Bill and prove that he's the greatest of all time, as Bill tries to rebuild with Jared Stidham and Tua Tagovailoa. But if you're not going to get Stidham ready, I mean, what really is out there? I know you guys just talked about this. That's really that much better than Andy Dalton. I mean, maybe you bring back Derek Carr. Bring over Derek Carr.
Yeah, I'd be fine with that, Derek Carr. I mean, I'm not a big Bridgewater guy.
I'd take him over Dalton.
I'd rather have Bridgewater than – you know, it's funny because we just talked about since, like, I don't want another year of old mopey Brady. He's on the decline, people are saying. I, you know, disagree. But I think Andy Dalton is on the decline at 32 years old. I mean, I think Andy Dalton's best days are behind him.
Let's go to Joe in Tewksbury on Bill Belichick. Hey, Joe.
Hey, guys.
Hey, what's up?
I was just thinking, Bill had to be pretty bitter about having his hand forced to trade Garoppolo. I'm sure he wanted a nice spot for him, but we've heard Brady talk in the past about growing up as a 49ers fan, and I think it was even floated, like somebody asked him about possibly retiring there. Now, so Bill sends Garoppolo there. That kind of screws up Brady's plan.
Yeah, this one, Joe, I don't buy into. I think this was more about the landing spot for
more
Garoppolo.
About stage mom Kyle Shanahan.
Yeah, for the stage mom coach that can help hold his hand and bring him along. And Kyle Shanahan can certainly do that. He was able to do it with Matt Ryan, who I also think is kind of an overrated bum. But when Shanahan was there, that team goes to the Super Bowl. And
they should have won the Super Bowl.
That stiff wins an MVP that year, and he hasn't been the same since.
Can I give you another one?
Yeah.
Do you know when Kyle Shanahan was the offensive coordinator in Houston that Matt Schaub had a Pro Bowl season? And look up those numbers.
Was that 12?
They are shockingly similar to Jimmy G's this year.
Oh, wow. Oh, I didn't even know he was there. I mean, I know he worked with the Redskins and Kirk Cousins when he was lighting it up there, too. So, you know, he gets the best out of bum quarterbacks. He's doing it now with the handsome sidecar.
And somebody who will remain unnamed, who's close to the Patriots, texted me yesterday and pointed out that when Shanahan was in Cleveland, Brian Hoyer won 7 games as a starter. Shanahan was the offensive coordinator.
Ugh, puke. Ugh, blech. Ugh, and that narrative, too, I don't really buy. Of all the Brady narratives, that one, like, oh, he always wanted to go back to the Niners. The Niners is where he wanted to play. Then, like, I don't know. He loved it as a kid, but we've all kind of I think collectively, the Royal We and Patriots fans have all like pumped that up. Like, you don't hear Brady really talking about the Niners.
No, that's true.
15 years
also,
or so.
And a lot of it too is like you have to be a scheme fit. Like that Shanahan, McVay, Kubiak style of offense, you need a specific type of quarterback. And frankly, it's one that's more mobile than Tom is at this point in his career.
We were talking about the Baseball Hall of Fame to open up the show earlier. I want to bring in Mike, and Wooburn has a thought on that. Hey, Mike.
Yes.
Hey, just two quick thoughts. I can't agree with you more on Bill James. I compared him like espousing secrecy yesterday to like the Council of Elrond protecting the identity of the ring bearer in Lord of the Rings. Like, it's not, seriously, it's not that important. It's not that important. You know, the fellowship does not need to be protected from the eye of accountability, because that's what they're basically protecting themselves from. They don't want to be held accountable for who they pick. It's ridiculous.
Totally. And I want to read the tweet, too, because, yeah, Bill James, who wants to protect perverts like Kevin Spacey, tweeted, "I believe in the secret ballot process for the Hall of Fame in large part because many Americans have somehow become addicted to efforts to force others to agree with them. A secret ballot is an important defense against that. Also, I defend terrorists."
can you read that like Gandalf now? That's what it sounds like, you know? It's imbecilic. And coming from the head of the Fellowship of the Nerds, which is half the reason why we have to deal with this crap, I discount his opinion immediately. I'll fix the Hall of Fame ballot for you instantly. Have them register with their real names on Tinder. It should be a Tinder app to see who gets into the Hall of Fame. Pop on the screen, swipe left, not a Hall of Famer. Swipe right, Hall of Famer. And you know what? On Tinder, I'm pretty sure you don't get to go back 6 years later and swipe right and still hook up with somebody. So Tinder app for Hall of Fame. Done.
I like it, Mike. Yeah, it's kind of like that two-second rule. You see him, yeah. Bang, swipe sure. right. Bang, swipe sure. left. Bang, swipe. Bonds, swipe right. Clemens, swipe right. I mean, come on. Larry, swipe left, Larry Walker. You're going to put Todd Helton in, too?
Larry Walker.
Unbelievable. All right, time to get to the Sports Hub Celtics show. Next 60 minutes, all Celtics-centric. A lot has changed in this past week, so we'll get to that. Things looking up for the Celtics as we get closer to the trade deadline. Want to touch on that and what they should do with Gordon Hayward as well in the next hour here on 98.5 The Sports Hub.
Playoff time in the NBA and NHL. Baseball's in full swing, and FanDuel is your place to bet on every game. Right now, new customers get $150 in bonus bets guaranteed. That's $150, win or lose. Bet on everything from slap shots to home runs to slam dunks on an app that's safe, secure, and easy to use. What are you waiting for? Visit FanDuel.com/Fred and make your first bet an automatic win. FanDuel, America's number one sports book.
21 plus and present in Massachusetts. First online real money wager only. $10 first deposit required. Bonus issued as non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire 7 days after receipt. See terms at sportsbook.fanduel.com. Hope is here. Gambling helpline ma.org or call 800-327-5050 for 24/7 support. Play it smart from the start. GameSenseMA.com or call 1-800-GAM-1234.
The Sports Hub On Demand content is brought to you by Miller Lite. Tip off every Celtics game all season long with a great-tasting ice-cold Miller Lite, the original light beer. Miller Lite, official partner of the 17-time world champion Boston Celtics. When it's game time, it's Miller time, Celtics fans.
The Doug Flutie Jr. Foundation for Autism is proud to be the presenting sponsor of the Boston Marathon's Adaptive Program for Runners, creating opportunities for runners with autism and other disabilities to participate in the legendary Boston Marathon.
Hi, my name is Mike Palmer, and I'm running as a member of the Adaptive Program for Runners in this year's Boston Marathon. Thanks to the Flutie Foundation, runners like me can achieve their dreams and finish the greatest race in the world.
The Flutie Foundation promotes inclusion for all to help everyone achieve their running dreams in Boston and beyond. Visit FlutieFoundation.org to get involved.